comments after a week of increasing backbiting and infighting in politics. I'm Charlotte Henry. My co-host Emma Bennell joins me. We're going to unpack it all. But I have to start with saying happy birthday earlier this week, Emma. I hope you had a lovely week. What's it like being 21 again?
Oh, 21. I'm so old. Who knew I'd ever reach this incredible milestone?
Oh, 21. Well, Annie Lennox, 17 again. We could have picked any of them. Well, I hope you had a nice day, but we've got to...
I'll take being the age of Annie Lennox, because I'd just take being Annie Lennox any day of the
world. That's a fair point. I'd take looking like Annie Lennox at any age. She is, so right. Yeah, quite so. We're going to have to start where we ended last week, I think, which is over in Scotland. Because I mentioned in the intro, it's all got a bit nasty and backbiting and infighting. I didn't mean you...
Has it got nasty backbiting?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't mean you and I. Already, the SNP leadership contest has descended into something rather unpleasant. A lot of it seems to descend, actually, in the way people are reacting to Kate Forbes and her...
It's so weird, because she's had these views in public for a very, very long time.
Let's clarify what we're talking about. She's part of a small minority church in Scotland, has very socially conservative views, as lots of religious organisations do. And people are really calling her out for it. I have to tell you, I'm having flashbacks of the Lib Dem leadership election that Tim Farron won. But anyway, what are you taking on from this?
I mean, I think in some ways she's done a better job of handling it than Tim Farron. Partly that's circumstantial. She is not trying to lead a party that's literally called Liberal.
And who was in the government...
As I think we discussed last week, it's a very, very broad church on economic and social policy. The only thing they all agree on is that Scotland should be independent. Mm. Once or if that happens, they will then splinter off into very significantly different parties with different policies. And this has been part of the problem because they sort of got this halfway house of running Holyrood, but they don't. They've done a very poor job of it because they don't agree on anything.
Yeah.
So it's I think, and she just answered the questions, which frankly is the best option. These are the things I believe. This is who I am. I wish to run your party. You get to decide.
Yes.
I think that's the right approach. Now, I don't agree with anything. I might agree with, we have an overlap on certain areas around the Gender Recognition Reform Act, but coming from polar opposite reasons. I wouldn't vote for it, but then I wouldn't join the SNP.
Right, exactly. It's not.
So I think the SNP have a right to decide if she's their person. And I think an awful lot of the journalism from London about, is she dead in the water now, is actually missing a lot of the point.
Oh, I suspect you're absolutely right about that. That's often the case when it's not a kind of Westminster-centric story. We often do. I think that is true. I would, worry more about what's being written in the Scottish press than the national press at this point. I take your point about her honesty and being truth, and I think that is fair. I think that's right, because it's much better than getting yourself in a tangle. The truth is, everyone knows what she thinks about these things. She didn't have to vote on them because of when she entered the Scottish Parliament. She didn't have to vote on gay marriage. For example, she was on maternity leave when those gender recognition changes went through and didn't come back to vote. So she never actually, for various reasons, voted on these things, but has answered the questions honestly.
Yeah. I think where there has been mistakes are people who were backing her who have now backed out, because I'm sorry, but they did know who she was. They work alongside her.
Yeah,
I think is just a bit pathetic.
It does seem a bit Weasley to me, because also you can legitimately make the case, I fundamentally disagree with Kate Forbes on these social issues, but I think she's the right person to lead Scotland to independence.
Yeah. Exactly. If your one goal is independence, then there's going to be compromise on other things.
Or you could say, I disagree with Kate Forbes on social issues, but they're issues of conscience. She's done a really good job on the economy, which is her role with the Scottish...
She hasn't, but yeah, that's a whole other
right,
question.
But you could, if you wanted to support her, one could try and make that argument. As I say, it does really remind me of the Tim Farron campaign, where people did kind of contort themselves actually to say, actually, I disagree with him on this, but we did this. This. It underlines to me a problem. I think you mentioned this to me off air, but I really have been thinking about it a lot this week, and I agree with you. The difficulty of having small C socially conservative views when you're trying to lead a party that has painted itself as quote marks progressive. And you're right that the SNP at different times has had different views on the kind of conservative to liberal scale and whatever else. But under Nicola Sturgeon, it's pretty clear how they've tried to paint themselves as part of as the Progressive Alliance. There was all that talk, wasn't there? The SNP was certainly included in that. And that does make it more difficult. There's one thing I do criticise Kate Forbes for. I think you're going to agree with me quite strongly. Her comments regarding Sadiq Khan. She said, the Prime Minister is Hindu, the Mayor of London is Muslim, so many will wonder why the Deputy First Minister believes a woman holding Christian views should be disqualified from holding high office in Scotland. Basically implying that because those two have also, well, essentially implying that because the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, is Muslim, he also shares those views on LGBT rights, which, I mean, I have many criticisms of Sadiq Khan as Mayor of London. His approach to LGBT people is not one of them. He attends Pride much.
He's done all sorts of Pride.
He's done, and it's not a token thing. Like,
I mean,
I thought that was a bit of a low blow, actually.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at things like the Night Star that he appointed, you know, he's really thought long and hard about, for example, the massive contribution that the LGBT community make to the nighttime economy in London. Is just done at a demo. It's done at policy level too.
Yeah, I mean, my point wasn't really whether we need to unpick Sadiq Khan's record on LGBT people, because I think my point was it was a really low blow.
It was a stupid blow. I mean, yeah, as I said,
and of course, the other thing that made
a month of Sundays. I mean, she wouldn't allow me to vote on a Sunday, but these are not the political points she needs to be making.
Oh, Emma. One day you're going
to... She's socially conservative. Maybe I'm not allowed to vote. But if she's allowed to run, I suppose I'm allowed to vote.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I didn't quite like about it, I may be being a bit tangential, is, of course, her main competitor for the role is Hamza Yousaf.
He's a Muslim man.
He's a Muslim. Yeah. And he's also answered the questions on gay marriage. So he didn't vote on... wasn't there to vote on them, but has said he would respect the policy and whatever his religion says. So there was just something I didn't really like about that, and I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think the invoking of Sadiq Khan may well have been a dog whistle to people who might be supporting Hamza Yousaf, definitely.
And not a very subtle one.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're actually going to have to transition to this, but we're going to go back to Brexit and Northern Ireland.
Martyrs, then.
Yes, because... But we're trying to solve Northern Ireland Protocol again, Emma. We're going to make Brexit work again.
Yeah, well, so I hear.
Are you feeling inspired? So Rishi Sunak went to Belfast. There's been all sorts of ministerial level talks with the EU. We haven't actually got anything out of it.
Let's cover this on the podcast, because I know it doesn't sound like it sometimes, listeners, but we do plan this stuff.
Promise we do.
I was like, really? Because I don't think they've made any progress since we talked about it last week. Maybe that's the story. It seems to be slightly unravelling. I think Sunak has to get this done, frankly, politically. I think if he doesn't, I mean, it will give him a year of pain from the ERG, but he's got to swallow that. And I think the shooting of the police officer in Northern Ireland really underlines that we are not in a situation where this isn't a live danger of Northern Ireland descending into ever worse chaos.
That's really...
He's got to lead. He can't just follow the ERG around like a lost puppy.
That's really why I wanted to bring it up, actually, because it's very easy for us, particularly us who don't live in Northern Ireland, to think, oh, this is just a tangential problem. It doesn't really matter. There's a fudge. Get on with it. But it really does matter. And the shooting of DCI John Caldwell, who, as far as I know, is actually amazingly still alive after. I mean, it's the most horrendous. Isn't it? He was shot whilst coaching some children playing football. He was shot in front of his own son. I mean, the whole thing seems to be a group called the New IRA, three that people are interested in. And I mean, for, not we talked about your birthday at the beginning, but for people of our ages, the troubles. I mean,
troubles
I was a bit.
I mean, growing up, we both grew up in London, didn't we?
Correct, and like you were hyper aware in London. I mean, I don't think
I had a friend who was caught up in the bombing of Selfridges.
Right,
nothing thankfully happened to her, but you know, she was a little girl. She was very scared.
Yeah, it was always a thing. You were sort of under the radar, aware of that something could happen in London, and of course, in Northern Ireland, this was your day-to-day life.
Yeah,
and we cannot, must not go back to that. It's very, and it seems to me now that, you know, any deal on a protocol obviously is not going to happen the week we're recording. It's going to happen in early March, probably. You know, as I said, Rishi Sunak and the other senior ministers are working on it, but you said he's got to get it done. I don't know what getting it done looks like anymore.
Well, I think they've got this deal with Europe that comes as close as, you know, that Europe has given up a lot, according to reports, in this deal. There is a role for the European Court of Justice because there has to be, but it's so minimal and there are so many steps before you get there that it just feels like this has to be what they impose and accept. And frankly, the DUP should be really conscious of how far backwards they've gone since Brexit, and their intransigence is not popular with their own voters.
Well, amazing. It's not a unionist party now. That's the lead party in Northern Ireland. Sinn Féin are the biggest party in Northern Ireland, and the Northern Ireland in Stormont.
And yeah, that tells us how much things have changed. And if the DUP just continue to be intransigent, it is going to mean, you know, I mean, there are problems with the way that the Good Friday Agreement is now imposing a lack of change on Northern Ireland politics. So, for example, the Alliance Party, who've sprung up since the Good Friday Agreement, because of the way that the Good Friday Agreement says that there has to be a balance of the unionist and the independence parties, they can't really get in terms of the way that the Good Friday Agreement's written, and that's unfair, that's undemocratic. So there does need to be some movement, you know, from the very, very important way that the Stormont Assembly was established. And I think the DUP is shooting them, sorry, I don't want to use that metaphor, I apologise, are really harming themselves in the way that they're behaving, because it's just going to accelerate that process.
Yeah, it just seems once again on the Northern Ireland side stuck here, you know, in Westminster. It's just classic, the Tory party once again tearing themselves apart on Europe. Frankly, they need to focus both, I mean, never mind, they need to focus on themselves so they get some chance of election in a year's or so's time. But what they need to also focus on is what's best for the people of Northern Ireland and the UK as a whole.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'll have to see what the EU leaders' reaction are to whatever happens. I actually think you're right. And there does seem to have been a slight slackening in the EU's position. I think time has been a bit of a healer. I also think it being Rishi Sunak, not Boris Johnson, has been a bit of a healer. I think there was a bit of a friction there with the way Boris Johnson...
I think that the diplomacy has been more diplomatic, which actually...
It certainly feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly feels less confrontational than Boris Johnson's bombast and...
Johnson and Frost just had such an appalling approach. So deeply, deeply unhelpful.
It really did seem pretty confrontational. Not very diplomatic, as you say. And I think that has made perhaps the EU more willing to compromise. Obviously, there is going to be a sticking point on the European Court of Justice, because the hardline Brexiteers, that really was one of their key red lines, wasn't it? You know, European laws, European courts, blah, blah, blah.
But if you are moving things into Europe, that is going to, you know, and from what I understand, goods that are just going to Northern Ireland will be fast tracked. Sort of green lane kind of thing. But things that are going on from Northern Ireland to ERA are going to need border checks, because you don't want a border between Northern Ireland and ERA, because that is a huge, huge problem. So that is where you need to have certain elements. And there are, I think, something like three steps that would be taken before that would ever go to the ECJ.
Right.
And it's very unlikely that any business is going to force that.
But again, these things are all symbolic, aren't they?
They are, but, you know, people need to get over that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd rather we were still in the EU and you can move things freely between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And actually, to flip back to right at the top of our discussion about, you know, the shooting and peace in Northern Ireland, I really think whatever one thinks, we shouldn't underestimate how positive the EU membership was for peace in Northern Ireland.
Absolutely. And for the Irish economy.
Correct. And so this has been a problem that was always going to be a problem as soon as we decided to leave the EU. And people sort of half talked about it. It was only really John Major and Tony Blair that properly warned about it during the EU campaign. Anyway, so yes, the symbolism is always a thing. Surely, if you really, really care about these kind of issues, surely the possibility that the European Court of Justice will be involved, that is surely better than a sea border between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Surely. Yeah.
Surely.
I guess it's hard for you and I to get into the kind of mindset of, you know, it's not our politics, but it seems to me that must be the better option.
I mean, ultimately, symbols matter because they mean something.
Correct.
The meaning behind the symbol has to be more important than the symbol. And I think that's the movement has happened behind the symbol. And that's what's got to be recognised here.
We mentioned Boris Johnson just a moment ago, just in terms of what his negotiating approach was with the EU. But he still seems to be behaving like he's the Prime Minister. In fact, you might argue he's working harder now he's not the Prime Minister than when he was the Prime Minister.
He's certainly behaving like he thinks he's going to be again at some point.
I think that's right. He's turned up in America in recent weeks. He turned up in Kyiv. He's now intervening on this EU issue. He refused to say on Sky News the day before recording this whether he'll actually back any proposal Rishi Sunak brings to Parliament, because in PMQs he did sort of insinuate there'd be some kind of vote.
Yeah.
We'll
have its say, which is interesting wording.
Very interesting wording, but anyway, it feels all a bit Theresa May era, doesn't it? Meaningful vote and all of that. But he's clearly been causing trouble. He's clearly on manoeuvres. He's had his break. He's earned a bunch of money. Now he's back on manoeuvres.
Far be it from me to ever agree with George Osborne, who I think is responsible for an awful lot of the problems we find ourselves in. But he's right when it comes to his analysis of Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson doesn't care about any of this stuff. He just cares about getting Boris Johnson back into number 10. And if he can cause trouble for Rishi Sunak and make that a more likely prospect, then he will, on whatever issue it happens to be.
I do think that's right. I mean, we should not underestimate the personal animosity between George Osborne and Boris Johnson as they say these things. But I think probably George Osborne is right. And the way Boris Johnson behaves...
That's all right. I've got quite a lot of personal animosity towards both of them. So.
But no, I mean, as in they know each other. They've, you know, all this schoolboy clashes
I've
and all
met
that.
Them both.
And, you know, there's obviously all sorts of personal relationship history. But anyway, never mind any of that. The way Boris Johnson behaves absolutely endorses a lot of what George Osborne says about him, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Boris Johnson's, I mean, it's interesting. Boris Johnson's behaving appallingly. More news at 10, you know, it's like, whatever. Boris Johnson. I think what's more interesting is whether that appalling behaviour will have the same effect as it's had previously. Because, you know, behaving appallingly was his thing. And
certain
voters liked it.
Yeah.
And thought that he was behaving appallingly as one of them. Yeah, they saw it as Boris behaving appallingly. Isn't it funny? Ha ha ha.
Absolutely.
Whether that is still as popular as it once was, and it wasn't always, it was always divisive. I think people get that very wrong when they think Boris always, you know, reached a huge swath of voters. He repelled a huge swath of voters too. And that group has grown.
Well, but he also appealed to enough voters to get an 80-seat majority. Yes, there was other elements, but
I think that that was his personal appeal was overblown on that.
I don't agree with that.
Against Corbyn.
Well, yes, that did certainly help him in lots of ways. But I think, look, there's only so much one can gather from vox pops in quote unquote red wall seats. But
there was a desperation and a exhaustion.
Yes.
And Boris was seen as the answer to that. I'm not denying that in any way. What I'm saying is that was fairly shallow. And
oh, for sure.
But
that's because
those voters down over things like lockdown and parties, they don't want him back.
But ultimately, his politics is a shallow politics. You might criticise even George Osborne, Rishi Sunak. There's all sorts of politicians you might criticise. I think those guys believe in a lot more than Boris Johnson does.
Yeah, they believe in all the wrong things, but they believe.
But that's your view. That's fine. Correct. Boris Johnson only believes in Boris Johnson. Your point about an exhaustion, I think, is quite an important one. I don't want to let that pass, because that is definitely how people felt when he was first came to office and first won the won that at 2019 election. People just wanted a big win so that there was, I was going to say...
An end to the stalemate.
Exactly. That's exactly the phrase I was looking for. And I wonder if we could get there again. It's been tough. And if he comes blustering back all positive and bravado, are people going to want that again?
I don't get that sense. I think certain Tory backbenchers might get that sense.
Yes, yes.
It may well happen. I think the electorate, if the Tories go for another leader, even if it's going back to an old one, I think the electorate are just going to laugh at them.
Well, we've said that before, haven't we, that you can't get away with another leader. I mean, they would try and contort themselves that this is the person that...
And also, I think Boris doesn't get in unopposed.
It would be pretty nasty.
So what are they going to do? Have another leadership contest?
I mean, I'm just going to turn off the mics and... I want to wrap up today's show. We're recording this on Friday the 24th. And... we've discussed a lot of domestic politics and a bit of a ding-dong and whatever, but we need to remember the world context. It's a year since Russia invaded Ukraine. I still can't quite process this as what's been going on. We don't really need to rediscuss the British and Americans. Obviously, it was a huge moment, Joe Biden turning up in Kyiv. We've seen President Zelensky here in the UK. I guess we should sign off.
When I said I spent... my birthday dinner with my family, two people who were there are the Ukrainian mother and son who are living with my parents at the moment, Olga and Alex, who are just delightful.
Yeah, I think it's been amazing how British people have wanted to do that.
I'm so glad that we have taken them in, and I'm glad to know them. But I wish we lived in a world where I hadn't ever known them, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I do. I guess we have to sign off the show today, really, just... hoping that we don't have to watch and discuss and worry about an ongoing war in Europe for very much longer. I
fear that that's wishful thinking.
I fear that too, but I'm going to end on a positive note. Emma, quickly remind people where they can keep up with you.
I'm on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_, and I have a Substack newsletter called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter, and I have a Substack that is at theaddition.substack.com, and I hope you will join me on there, and I hope you will join us next week. Please share the show with people who you think will enjoy it, and no doubt there'll be plenty more to discuss next week, so see you then.